Hello, this is Matt Woodbury. I'll be bringing you the first half of the Pantograph News today from the edition dated Friday, December 8th, 2017. I'll start with a story on the first page titled New Vale Church Serves as Community Invitation. Large Open Facility Creates More Space for People to Gather. Written by Paul Schweich. When the Reverend Ted Max of Vale Church on Thursday walked around the church building under construction at 3101 Ireland Grove Road, he didn't just see crews working on walls and a roof. He saw an invitation. We're running out of space. At the moment, the current church building at 1304 Morrissey Drive, Bloomington, the pastor said, this building represents an opportunity for more people to come. We're making more room, he added. If you want to learn about God, here's a place you can come. Vale Church is a longtime Bloomington church with a quickly growing congregation. The church had 1,650 congregants and an average Sunday attendance of 1,200 to 1,250 when it acquired the land for the new building in April 2016. Now, the church has 2,300 congregants and an average Sunday attendance of 1,700, Max said. We have a great group of people who are inviting their friends to hear the message that has stood the test of time for thousands of years, that God wants to reconnect with his people, Max said. The church acquired 37 acres south of Ireland Grove Road and west of the links at Ireland Grove because the site allows for expansion. Max called the $6 million church building under construction our first step to make room for our people. The goal is to bring people together, Max said. He asked us to gather. Community is about connecting, is about us connecting to him together. As a physical representation of that, the future church building will have only three spaces for worship, gathering, and children's activities. There will be no small classrooms and no hallways, he said. It's about building community, he explained. We don't want to divide ourselves when we are together, so the building is designed to bring us together. That's why the new building of 31,000 square feet actually will be smaller than the existing 36,000 square foot building, a renovated automobile dealership. There is no wasted space in the new building, he said. We will be able to get more people into this building even though we will have less square footage. Vale Church gradually has been adding to its staff as the congregation grows and has 19 full and part-time employees. The church has 5 weekend services. Construction began in August and is on schedule with the building about 50% complete, Max said. The building should be enclosed by the end of the month, and the first worship services should take place in the new building on June 1st, Max said. The property at 1304 Morrissey Drive is being sold to Michael Kale, CEO of the Wilbur Group, a subrogation claims recovery office serving primarily the insurance industry and based at 210 Landmark Drive in Normal. Wilbur Group will remain on Landmark Drive, but is looking at the Morrissey Drive site for future expansion, Kale said. As Max looked at the church building under construction, he added perspective. I didn't get into ministry to build this building, he said. I got into ministry to build the kingdom of God. I'm excited about what this building will mean to the people we've been called to serve. Lee Edison and his wife Zena have been members of the church for 63 years. Completion of the building will permit more space for our congregation, but more importantly, it will mean that we can possibly reach more unchurched people from Bloomington, Normal, and surrounding areas, Edison said. There are many people in our area that currently are not hearing the message that is being proclaimed by Vale Church, and it's our desire to reach and present the scriptures of the Bible to all who will listen, he said. Our job is to tell and leave the rest to God. Moving right along, our next article is entitled Lawsuit Targets Pupil's Record. Mom Seeks Removal of Misconduct Claims. And the article is written by Edith Brady Lunny. The mother of a Carlock Elementary School second grader has filed a lawsuit seeking removal of allegations of sexual misconduct by the child from his school record. The mother, whose name is not being disclosed by the Pantograph to protect the child's privacy, claims her son was given a 2-day in-school suspension following accusations by the school that he had inappropriately touched another student on September 19th. After notifying the mother of the allegations, school officials contacted police and requested prosecution of the child, according to the filing in McLean County Circuit Court. 2 days after the incident, Carlock principal Laura Delgado told the mother she was imposing the suspension based upon a video of the alleged misconduct, according to the request for an injunction filed by Peoria lawyer Michael Evans. The mother accuses Unit 5 of refusing to provide her with access to the video and advance notice of the suspension. After she challenged the suspension, the school did not arrange for a hearing officer to review the discipline as required by the Illinois School Code, according to the lawsuit. Calls to Delgado were referred to Unit 5 attorney Kurt Richardson, who said he was aware of the situation, but the district had not been served with the court action. "We will defend whatever action is taken against us and refer the matter to our insurance carrier," said Richardson, adding the district is barred from discussing information contained in student records. The mother's lawyer did not return a call for comment on Thursday. The Danvers Police Department, which provides police coverage for Carlock, confirmed that a report related to the incident was forwarded to the McLean County State's Attorney's Office. State's Attorney Jason Chambers said the report was reviewed by his office and no grounds were found for pursuing criminal charges. The entry of information in the child's school records related to the alleged sexual incident will cause the youth irreparable harm, said the lawsuit seeking removal of that information. In addition to a revision of her son's school records, the mother is seeking more than $50,000 in damages. A May 4, 2018 hearing is scheduled on the lawsuit. Continuing with some health news, our next article is entitled "Officials to Test Benefits of 3D Mammograms." A better mammogram? Increasingly, women are asked if they want a 3D mammogram instead of the regular X-ray, and now U.S. health officials are starting a huge study to tell if the newer, sometimes pricier choice really improves screening for breast cancer. It's the latest dilemma in a field that already vexes women with conflicting guidelines on when to get checked. Starting at age 40, 45, or 50, annually or every other year. The issue, mammograms can save lives if they catch aggressive breast cancers early, but they also can harm through frequent false alarms and by spotting tumors that grow so slowly they would never have posed a threat. Overdiagnosis that means some women undergo unneeded treatment. The trade-off is a key question as doctors begin recruiting 165,000 women nationally. To compare potentially more beneficial 3D mammograms, known scientifically as tomosynthesis, with standard two-dimensional digital mammography. The 3D mammograms have been marketed as being able to find more cancers. But the idea isn't so much finding more cancers as finding the cancers that are going to be life-threatening, said Dr. Warda McCaskill-Stevens of the National Cancer Institute, which is funding the new research to tell whether the 3D scans truly point the tumors that matter most. It's one of the largest randomized trials of mammography in decades, and scientists designed the research to do more than answer that key 3D question. They hope the findings also eventually will help clear some of the confusion surrounding best screening practices. The most important thing about this study is that it's moving us to individualized screening as opposed to what we have now, which is one-size-fits-all screening, predicted study chair Dr. Etta Pisano, a radiologist at Boston's Beth Israel Deaconess Medical Center. "We're going to have a much better understanding of how to screen women so that we do the least amount of harm." Who needs them? That depends on who you ask. Guidelines vary for women at average risk of breast cancer. Those at increased risk because of family history or genetics already get different advice. The American College of Radiology recommends annual mammograms starting at age 40. The American Cancer Society urges annual checks starting at 45 and switching to every other year at 55, although it says women 40 to 44 still can opt for a mammogram. The U.S. Preventative Service Task Force, a government advisory group, recommends starting at age 50 with mammograms every other year. It too says 40-somethings can choose earlier screenings. How to decide? Understanding that mammograms come with pros and cons and weigh them, said Dr. Otis Brawley, the American Cancer Society's chief medical officer. Breast cancer is far less common at age 40 than at age 50 and beyond. After menopause, tumors tend to grow more slowly, and women's breast tissue becomes less dense and easier for mammograms to provide a clear image. Consider, for every 1,000 women screened every other year until their 70s, starting at age 40 instead of 50, would prevent one additional death, but create 576 more false alarms and 58 extra unneeded biopsies, the task force estimated. Also, two extra women would be treated for tumors that would have become life-threatening. That overdiagnosis problem. As for what type to choose, some insurers, including Medicare, cover the 3D version, and a small number of states mandate coverage. Other insurers may require women to pay $50 to $100 more out of pocket. Whoever ultimately pays, extra time to analyze the scans adds to the cost. The new study. About 100 mammography clinics across the U.S. and a few in Canada will enroll healthy women ages 45 to 74 who already are planning to get a routine mammogram. They'll be randomly assigned to get either the regular or 3D versions for 5 years. Most will be screened annually, but postmenopausal women who don't have certain cancer risk factors will be screened every other year. Researchers will track every woman's results, including samples from biopsies plus genetic and other tests, as well as how any cancer patients fare. The giant database, hopefully, will help them tease out more information about which women benefit most from what type and frequency of screening. Mammography has been provocative over many decades. It's important that women have a better understanding of how mammography is important for them based upon their age and other risk factors, said McCaskill Stevens. Our next article is entitled Residents Support Recycling Waste Plan, written by Derek Bay. Bloomington Normal residents at a public hearing Thursday seemed to be on board with a plan that could require businesses and landlords to offer recycling services. During a session on the county's new Materials Recovery and Resource Management Plan, which spells out recycling and other waste disposal plans for the next 20 years, 8 speakers agreed they support it, despite possible opposition from businesses, landlords, and those who oppose regulations. "I don't want a law because I want my freedom," is about a kindergarten-level understanding of freedom in my view. Let's handle the issues like grown-ups and recognize that sometimes we do need ordinances to steer the country the direction it needs to go, said Bob Broad of Normal. "That's what leaders do, that's what communities do, and that's what we need to do." Broad and others addressed about 75 people at a meeting of McLean County Board's Land Use Committee, which is expected to vote on the plan January 4th. The full board and the Bloomington and Normal City Councils are expected to sign off on the plan early next year. Problems addressed in the plan include construction and demolition waste, likely to be addressed with an ordinance, and waste from commercial and multifamily housing sites, both of which would be addressed first with voluntary pilot programs and then possibly through ordinances. Many of those who attended Thursday were Illinois State University students who can recycle at drop-off sites in Normal, but often don't have cars to bring recycling to them and lack recycling bins at their apartment buildings. "We don't have a choice to recycle because it's very inconvenient," said Cassie Metz, an ISU student who worked on the plan. "A lot of my friends and I believe that recycling should be a right. We shouldn't have to go out of our way to harm our environment less." ISU student Wesley Ward presented the committee with a petition for multifamily recycling services signed by more than 3,000 students. "My kids are being taught in school how to recycle. They're being encouraged to recycle in their cafeteria. They're being encouraged to recycle in their classroom. In fact, they're being encouraged to come home and teach us how to recycle," said Sarah Keene, a Bloomington resident and ISU student. "Yet, when they get older, there's not as many recycling options for them." Land Use Committee member Ryan Strichlow, a Bloomington business owner, questioned the ordinance idea during last month's meeting and invited public feedback on the plan. Public comments can be submitted until January 4th to the McLean County Clerk's Office at 115 East Washington Street, Bloomington, 61701, or by phone at 88-5001, or by email to mbrown@ecologyactioncenter.org. The Normal-based Ecology Action Center designed the plan in consultation with government officials, business owners, nonprofit organizations, and other stakeholders. Next up, another article written by Derek Bay, titled ARC Fees to Stay Level. Membership fees at Normal Township's Popular Activity and Recreation Center, or the ARC, are likely to stay the same for now, though an existing discount may be discontinued. Officials considered raising fees for members who live outside the township, or for all members equally, but neither option appears necessary after new developments related to the township's budget, said Supervisor Sarah Grammer. We've looked at a whole lot of other things at the same time, like increased fundraising and slashing bills that are working out, she said after Thursday's meeting of ARC's Senior Citizen Advisory Committee. Budget changes include replacing a retiring employee with part-time help, expected to save $35,000 per year, and more automation of heating and air conditioning at the ARC that could save as much as $21,000 annually. Officials estimated increasing fees could raise $80,000 per year that would help offset increased costs since ARC moved to a new building and jumped to nearly 4,000 members in early 2016. One group of patrons might still see a fee increase, however. Couples who can get a $50 joint membership rather than two $30 individual memberships. The joint membership may be discontinued. About 1,700 of ARC's 3,870 members have joint memberships. It would make things a whole lot easier and increase the revenue without increasing the fee, said Mindy Morgan, ARC's Director of Operations. Officials said ARC would still be affordable without the discount, especially because it offers scholarships that let needy residents participate for $5 per year. The township also is trying to get ARC in the Silver Sneakers program that would let some residents over 65 years old get free memberships. Morgan emphasized that any change regarding the couple's discount is still in the early discussion stage. It's expected to be discussed at the committee's next meeting, 9:30 a.m., January 4th, in the ARC conference room. If the committee approves the change, it would go to the township board for final approval. The township's budget is expected to be finalized in January and approved in the spring. Previously, officials discussed increasing rates to $60 and $110 respectively for Bloomington residents, and $80 and $150 respectively for residents of areas outside Bloomington Normal. They also considered asking City of Bloomington Township to double its annual contribution to ARC. City of Bloomington Township pays $40,000 to Normal Township to recover residents who use ARC, but don't pay property taxes to support it. Shifting focus to a little bit of political news, our next article is entitled Yoder Seeks Resident Circuit Court Judge Election, written by Edith Brady Lenny. 11th Judicial Circuit Associate Judge William Yoder seeks election as McLean County Resident Circuit Judge in November 2018 general election. Yoder announced Thursday at a gathering in the lobby of McLean County Law and Justice Center in downtown Bloomington his candidacy to fill a vacancy created by December 2018 retirement of Judge Kevin Fitzgerald, Chief Judge of the 11th Judicial Circuit. Surrounded by an audience of family and supporters, Yoder pledged to uphold high standards if elected. The integrity of and public confidence in our court system has always been my top priority, said Yoder, an associate judge since 2011. Yoder, who served as McLean County's state's attorney from 2002 to 2011, was introduced by Bloomington lawyer Guy Fraker and retired Chief Judge Elizabeth Robb. Robb noted that Yoder's dedication to improve the legal system included his work with other criminal justice leaders to establish the McLean County Drug Court in 2006. After months of meetings on the new problem-solving court, Yoder urged his colleagues to stop planning and just do it. In his endorsement of Yoder, Fraker said the candidate's abilities are consistent with what we've come to expect on the bench in McLean County. Yoder's current responsibilities include the McLean County recovery court for defendants for whom mental illness plays a role in their alleged offenses. The candidate is a lifelong resident of McLean County. He received a bachelor's degree from Purdue University and law degree from John Marshall Law School in Chicago. Yoder is the father of two grown children and is engaged to McLean County Coroner Kathy Davis. Our next article out of Springfield is entitled State to Have Blended Tax Rate for 17 Income. Illinois taxpayers will be paying an in-between rate on 2017 income as a result of the state's tax increase. The State Journal Register reports the Illinois Department of Revenue has calculated that the blended rate will be 4.35% for individual returns that are due in April. The basic tax rate increased in July from 3.75% to 4.95%. Department spokesman Terry Horstman says the rate is based on the number of days under the 3.75% and the days under the 4.95% rate. Horstman says the state tax forms will use the blended rate to make it easier for taxpayers. He says the rate on returns applies to income earned from January through December. And the next article, written by Julia Evilsizer, entitled Shoe Donations Needed for Kids. The Promise Council needs help putting shoes on the feet of Bloomington Normal students. After hearing the needs from families in McLean County Unit 5 and Bloomington District 87 schools, the nonprofit organization organized the Promise Shoes Project. We collected nearly 200 pairs of tennis shoes over the summer, and we've given about 62 pairs during the school year, said Jan Meadows, Promise Council Chair at Cedar Ridge Elementary School. Our shelves are emptying. Through some public awareness, we think we can fill the bank. New and gently used tennis shoes in any size for children in early childhood education through high school are accepted. Drop-off locations include both districts' main offices, Eugene Field Vocational Training Center in Normal, and any school office. Donors should include a note that says, Promise Shoes. We know how quickly kids grow out of shoes, so if a family has an extra pair sitting around that has only been worn a few times, we'd love to have them, said Meadows. Students at Eugene Field in the Vocational Transition Assistance Program clean and sort the shoes for distribution. Having taught for 30 years, I would see kids come to school wearing their brother's shoes six sizes too big, or their mom's tennis shoes because they didn't have any of their own. Some are held together by tape, said Meadows. Any family in need of a pair of tennis shoes can either talk to their school office or email promiseshoes587@gmail.com. The requested shoes are delivered for the student at school. Founded in 2008, the Promise Council is a nonprofit organization headed by adults to fulfill needs of students outside the classroom, such as food, clothing, and mentoring. And let's round out this first half of the Pantograph News with a little update on some national issues. This next article, entitled FBI Director Wray Defends Bureau Against Attacks, after Trump tweets slam agency, chief says reputation quite good. Countering strident attacks on his agency from the president who appointed him, FBI Director Christopher Wray on Thursday defended the tens of thousands of people who work with him and declared, "There is no finer institution." Wray, who has led the agency just 4 months, fended off politically charged questions from lawmakers of both parties during a routine oversight hearing that was overtaken by questions about Hillary Clinton's emails and President Donald Trump's campaign. Citing pending investigations, he repeatedly declined to answer questions about either, while also refusing to give an opinion on whether Trump could be accused of obstructing justice. He did not hesitate to defend the nation's premier law enforcement agency following a weekend of Twitter attacks by Trump, who called the FBI a biased institution whose reputation is in tatters, worst in history, and urged Wray to clean house. The outburst from the president followed a guilty plea from his former national security advisor for lying to the FBI and the revelation that an agent had been removed from a special team investigating the Trump campaign because of text messages seen as potentially anti-Trump. Wray, who was nominated as FBI director by Trump, faced Republican criticism over perceived political bias in special counsel Robert Mueller's probe of possible Trump campaign ties to during the 2016 presidential election. And next up is an article entitled Congress Stops Shutdown, But More Problems Loom. Measures keep federal government running through December 22nd. Congress on Thursday passed a stopgap spending bill to prevent a government shutdown this weekend and buy time for challenging talks on a wide range of unfinished business on Capitol Hill. The shutdown reprieve came as all sides issued optimistic takes on an afternoon White House meeting between top congressional leaders and President Donald Trump. The measure passed the House 235-193, mostly along party lines, and breezed through the Senate on a sweeping 81-14 tally barely an hour later. It would keep the government running through December 22nd, when another and more difficult shutdown problem awaits. The bill now heads to Trump for his signature. Topics at the White House session included relief from a budget freeze on the Pentagon and domestic agencies, extending a key children's health program, and aid to hurricane-slammed Puerto Rico, Texas, and Florida. The trickiest topics, and a top priority for Democrats, involves protections for immigrants brought to the country illegally as children. These dreamer immigrants are viewed sympathetically by the public and most lawmakers, but face deportation in a few months because Trump reversed administration protections provided to them by former President Barack Obama. In back-to-back statements, both Democratic and GOP leaders declared the meeting productive. The White House called it constructive. Privately, congressional aides said little progress had been made. We had a productive conversation on a wide variety of issues. Nothing specific has been agreed to, but discussions continue, said Capitol Hill's top Democrats, Senator Chuck Schumer of New York and Nancy Pelosi of California, ticking off a roster of Democratic priorities, including domestic spending increases, funding for veterans, and money to battle opioid abuse, immigration, and health care. GOP leaders said they agreed with the need to address immigration. And we'll round out the day with a little local criminal justice news. A man serving as his own counsel on cocaine charges was the sole defense witness Thursday about 2 hours of testimony that included his admission that he had used drugs for the better part of 3 decades. Andrew Pinkston is accused of selling drugs to a man considered a friend and fellow drug user in June 2016 in what turned out to be a Bloomington Vice Unit operation. Acting as his own lawyer for the 4-day trial, the 47-year-old defendant has accused police and a confidential police source of entrapment. In 2 hours of profanity-laced testimony, Pinkston leaned over the edge of the witness stand and looked directly at jurors as he recounted the multiple phone calls he received on June 8, 2016, from another drug user looking for some crack cocaine. "My friend, he did me wrong. He used me," Pinkston testified. At one point, Pinkston became angry and started to leave the witness stand after a series of objections raised by Assistant State's Attorney Jeff Horv to portions of his testimony. After a short break, the testimony continued. Pinkston wrapped up his testimony by telling jurors, "Do I want to go home? Hell yes." In response to questions from Horv, Pinkston admitted he buys drugs, but denied being a drug dealer. When asked why he left work early to get drugs for the informant, Pinkston acknowledged he had a choice. "I had to do something to get my phone to stop ringing," he said, the defendant adding, "I wanted dope, man. It ain't about the money for me." Earlier Thursday, Pinkston tried unsuccessfully to play several videos for the jury, including one brought into the courtroom by a woman who handed it directly to the defendant. "I'm trying to lay it all out. I want the truth and nothing but the truth if it kills me," Pinkston argued. Judge Robert Freitag denied the defense effort to play the video after Pinkston could not confirm the contents of the DVD that had not been shared with the state. The trial was recessed Thursday afternoon and is expected to conclude Friday after closing arguments. The drug charge that normally carries a possible sentence of 15 years could send Pinkston to prison for 30 years because of his criminal record. That's it for the first half of the Pantograph News from the edition dated Friday, December 8th, 2017. Stick with us and we'll be back in a second with the second half of the Pantograph News shortly. But thank you for listening. My name is Matt Woodbury.